It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Carm and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Del Carm.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
In this week's show, we talk URC, as we would suppose normally do. It's coming to a head. This weekend's action will take us to the penultimate round of league action. So obviously there are vast permutations for teams wanting to get into the top eight, and indeed teams hoping to finish in the top four. So we'll be chatting about that. And then later on in the show, Brendan, a topic that's very close to South African hearts, the scrum and where it finds itself in the global game.
Yeah, as Don Heman would say, we ons vat om 'n hawe toe when we talk about that. So, yeah, it should be quite an interesting chat. But yeah, I mean, URC action, it just doesn't get every week. I think we sort of tie ourselves in knots with the permutations. And you sort of say to yourself, it doesn't really help. You might as well just wait till the end of the round to see who's sort of where. Mm. But you end up doing it anyway and sort of calculating after every game what that means for everybody else. And yeah, I suppose that's the nature of the game, but we're going to be doing that for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, on that point, I think both of us wrote about that in this week. And I kind of arrived at the conclusion, I'm not sure what you wrote and you arrived at the same one, but the way the top eight is at the moment, it looks like it might stay that way.
Yeah, I think the teams on the outside, the Lions are going to have a very tough time getting into that, if I just look at the fixtures. Yeah, and we'll go through the bit more detail now. And Connacht as well, yeah. And I think the other curveball, of course, is the EPCR Challenge Cup, because if the Sharks win that, then only seven teams qualify for the Investec Champions Cup next season. Which makes it a bit difficult. So teams are not going to want to finish eighth, just in case. They're going to want to finish seventh. Although they should know that going into the last round, obviously because the Challenge Cup final is before the last round. But yeah, it's an interesting curveball, and you can see a lot of these teams becoming Gloucester supporters in the next couple of weeks. Although I must say, I mean, Gloucester haven't done themselves any favours. I see this weekend in the Premiership, they lost 19-0 with the third-string team. And you're still going to wonder, did they disrespect the game? Are they going to be investigated?
Oh.
The same English journalists who were so up in arms about the Bulls have suddenly become Gloucester defenders this week, which has been rather interesting to watch.
Yeah, I saw the score and I thought, oops, I wonder how many changes they made. And yeah, of course, there we saw it. But a rather bizarre result. And I would imagine if you're a sponsor, I'm not sure if you want your name attached to that kind of activity.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing we sort of never talk about is that behind the scenes, there'll be some heated phone calls from people who've invested their money there. You can understand it, though, and it comes back to the big bag of wolf in the room the whole time. Until we get a global season, until teams can sort of manage their squads better, you're always going to have some team doing this at some point in the season. So,
yeah. Look, I mean, we have nudged closer to a global season. We're now as close as we've ever been, but we're not there yet.
No, and they keep on promising, and they keep on wanting to add competitions. But, I think we can spend a whole podcast sort of 10 episodes on just the way that sort of worked out. But I think let's turn to URC action. I think the one thing which I don't see changing, they might change in terms of the order, but the top four are already through, that being Glasgow Warriors, Leinster, Munster, and the Bulls. They might, one or two of them might change given the thing, but I'm not sure it's going to change too much.
Yeah, the order might change. Look, we have to state that mathematically the Storms can still sneak in there, but it looks unlikely.
Yeah. And that, of course, if it stays that way and the log stays that way at the moment, it gives us what none of us want, and that's a Bulls Storms quarterfinal at Loftus. From a South African viewpoint, you want two teams playing in different parts of the competition, not against each other in the quarterfinals, because one of them will obviously go out. And plus, we've seen what's happened in the past. It's I don't know, that Bulls Storms rivalry is good. I'm not sure I really want to see it at the quarterfinal stage. Maybe semi or final, but not quarterfinal.
Yeah. Yeah, they tend to take lumps out of each other. So it kind of, whoever wins, it's they already kind of almost softened up for the semi-final.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and then you look at the other ones. I'm just getting my notes up here quickly. Who they play. I mean, Storm is obviously on 50 points. They have 6 points behind the Bulls. They've got Connacht and the Lions, Connacht away and the Lions at home. They're not the greatest travelers, and as we saw against the Dragons last Friday night, except for the last 3 minutes where they suddenly became this razzle-dazzle team. And so they blew out the scoreline. It was a bizarre game. And the funniest part of that game wasn't so much the rugby for me, was the consistent Welsh commentators carrying on about how wonderful the weather was. They must have mentioned it about 25 times.
In fact, to be fair, the initial images you saw from the ground was from behind the poles. And I looked at the field and it was bathed in sunshine. And I thought, have they moved the fixture? What's going on here? Am I watching the right thing? But yeah, they were gushing about it.
Yeah, and not to put it down, I mean, you don't get days like that in Wales very often, so they can gush about it. It's just a bit strange for us here in South Africa to obviously sit and look at
what. Well, the Stormers might have the opposite this week because, I mean, the Galway famously can be exceptionally inhospitable as far as the weather's concerned.
Yeah. I just wonder, I mean, Connacht aren't the team that they were. They lost quite badly against Munster this past weekend. The Lions beat them with 14 men. We all remember that amazing fixture that we watched a couple of weeks ago. So there's definitely a chance for the Stormers, but... Yeah, the Stormers are like the Lions. It's at times their own worst enemies. On Friday night, they were very much their own worst enemies at times. And you just hope if they can put together what they put together in those last 3 minutes, they'll be fine. But yeah, it all depends. Galway is famous for the wind and the rain going sideways and with a sloping pitch. And it's a rather tough place to play. And only one South African side has ever won there, and that's the Lions.
Yeah, and in fact, even in the Irish Conference, they tend to stand their ground against even teams like Leinster and Munster and so on. May not have happened that much of late, but they have a very good record. That's the point.
I must admit, they remind me a bit of a Griquas. That sort of team that's tough to beat. They won't always have the stars that the other teams have, but on their home ground on this particular night, it's not an easy game for anybody. So, and then, of course, they've got the Lions at home next, the final fixture, and that's going to be an interesting one as well. Although, I mean, the Stormers have dominated the local derbies pretty easily in the last couple of years. Can't see the Lions.
They beat the Lions early doors as well in this year's competition. Look, I mean, they would start that game favourites, no doubt. But they would also start that game as the travelling team, flown back from Ireland.
That's going to be interesting. I still think the Lions probably have a bit of a superhuman effort if they're going to win that one.
Look, let's put it this way. If the Lions get past their next hurdle, which would be a considerable one against Glasgow Warriors, that gets their tails up and gives them something proper to aim for. So, yeah, that's what they will be open for.
Yeah, of course, there's ifs and buts, and we're going to go through a lot of those ifs and buts in this permutations. Sixth, Ulster, 49 points. They've got Leinster and Munster. Leinster at home, Munster away. Even though those are derbies, those are not great. That's not a great run into the playoffs. You can easily lose both those games quite badly. So,
The converse is probably true as well, because if you win both, that so sets you up for whoever you play in a quarterfinal.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And then, Edinburgh are seventh, 48 points. They have Munster at home and Benetton away. Also, two tough games.
That could be the eliminator, especially if the Sharks go on to win the Challenge Cup.
Yeah.
Because suddenly eight falls away, and then they both scrambling for seven.
Yeah, and both of those, I mean, teams that Edinburgh play are tough ones. I mean, Benetton, it starts getting you start hearing the same teams again and again because Benetton obviously have the Bulls in Edinburgh, if you look at them, and that's just as tough for them. So they whatever points these teams are going to pick up now is going to be crucial in those last couple of rounds.
I think that's what makes it so difficult for the Lions, because one of Benetton and Edinburgh will get a spot. Yeah. If you obviously from that last game, they guaranteed, and already they lead the Lions by 4, so one of them will kick on.
Yeah, exactly. Look at those teams, 9th and 10th, to Connacht and the Lions, 44 points both. Connacht, Stormers home, Leinster away, and the Lions, Glasgow home, Stormers away. They both could probably win those two games, but Connacht, I don't see beating Leinster in Dublin. And Lions have to win this game against Glasgow. Otherwise, I think that's basically it.
Yeah, I think it will be deflating, and they will only then in that case go to Cape Town as the spoilers. But if you get past Glasgow Warriors, that gives you suddenly a bit of belief, gets your tail up, and you're suddenly in the conversation. So the Stormers would not want to come home and confront the Lions with their claws out. So
With the Lions victory and the Stormers loss in Connacht, they make that final week very, very interesting.
The interesting thing there, sorry, Brendan, if the Stormers were to lose to Connacht, the Lions win against the Warriors and then they beat the Stormers, they will actually finish above the Stormers.
Jeez, that could make quite an interesting conversation as well.
Well, even if it was with a bonus point, I think they'll, I think it is possible, actually.
It is definitely possible. Whether it'll happen is, I suppose, the other thing. and then I suppose every permutation does need a wild card, a wild outsider. Ospreys on 40 points, they still mathematically have a chance. And they have Dragons and at home and Cardiff away. Both games they could easily win with 5 points and end up with 50 points. So they're not out of it. And they, if I was them, I'd probably say let the others fight themselves to the death and we'll sneak in. So there's an interesting one.
But the only problem they have then is you've got again, that Benetton Edinburgh game will be spoilers for them, because one of the two will take 4 points at least. And that takes them beyond the Ospreys. Unless, of course, there's a draw. You throw in a draw into the equation, for which is not impossible.
Nothing is impossible.
Edinburgh, Benetton. And then suddenly the door opens quite wide.
Yeah, so it's a couple of interesting permutations, and I suppose it's easy now to see, but I personally don't think the top 8 will change. They might change in order, but I think it's going to be very tough for any team outside the top 8 now to sneak in there as well. So. But saying that, let's go through quickly quick fire match predictions. Friday, Zebra hosts Scarlets in the battle of the bottom feeders.
Oof. You know what? I'm going to go Zebra. Surely they do.
They must be due for something at least. I don't know. I guess Scarlett's there, but I'm not sure either of us really worry who wins.
Great conviction here. In that
16th city. Against 40th. At the same time, Edinburgh hosts Munster. I think Munster probably in the form they're in at the moment should be favourites even away from home. But it's going to be an epic battle, that one.
Yeah, they've just started to purr menacingly the way they did last season. So, I'd have to lean with Munster. Although Edinburgh have a lot of there's a big carrot that's being dangled there, so they will not be short of inspiration.
Yeah. Saturday, Bulls-Benetton. I think Bulls at home should take that one, although that will be a high-scoring game. Benetton are a tough team for them.
Yeah. That could easily be a 48-28 or something like that.
Yeah. But I think Bulls should, and the form they in at home, 2:00 on the Highveld, they should be fine with that. Another one that we, not really going to excite us, it's going to be exactly the same time, or at 4:00, same time as the Lions. Ospreys, Dragons. Ospreys should take that, I reckon.
Yes,
Ospreys. Take 5 points. And then the one we're all going to be watching, Lions, Glasgow. I think it's going to be very tough for the Lions. They can do it. Nothing is impossible, but I think you have to back the team that's at the top of the log at the moment.
Yeah, I think the Lions will put them under huge pressure at times in that game. I think, however, Glasgow's game management, the organization and defense will stand them in good stead. And also, when they have opportunities, they've developed a system now whereby they actually score points when they need to. So they won't necessarily play at 100 miles an hour all the time, but when it comes to squeezing the crucial moments in the game, I think they possess that more than the Lions do at the moment.
Yeah, and we saw it against the Bulls, the way they could score points there at the end there. And I know it was an intercept try, and the Bulls say they maybe played a bit too much rugby in that game. But, yeah, it takes some to come down back from 37-10 at Loftus is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And that's exactly the thing the Lions may be guilty of as well, playing a bit too much.
Exactly. And, I suppose there's another discussion at some point is about how the Bulls tend to give these leads away. They've done it against Saracens, against Bordeaux, against Munster. You know, they do it quite often at Loftus this season. And I suppose, you know, that Jake says that's a bit of the inexperience where they should be closing games out. They still want to play. And sometimes it catches them. At least they've got the lead, I suppose. So it's easier to say that.
It then comes with experience and the ability to sort of tighten the screws and play the percentages. And I know obviously it's a difficult thing. It's almost counterintuitive because you've had the other team under pressure. You feel that you can score more points, but then in doing so, there's the odd mistake, and then you find yourself under a little bit of pressure.
Well, that's going to be interesting at least. Then two games at the same time, which South African teams are not going to like, South African fans. Connacht at 6:05 host the Stormers, and the Sharks play at 6:15 against Cardiff. Connacht Stormers won. I think I'd go for the Stormers, but it's going to be they're going to have to be at their best to win there at Connacht.
Not necessarily at their very best, but they will have to play for more than how long did they play last week? 15 minutes? you know, when they sort of put things in place properly. They will need a more all-round effort, let's put it that way. So they're entirely capable of walking away from Galway with maybe a 10-point win, but it's gonna take a proper effort.
Yeah. And Sharks, they should win that game. I don't know. Well, I'd say should win. Cardiff have come here before. That was the end of Sean Everett, if you remember, right? Cardiff came to Durban and won there, and that sort of ended his tenure at the Sharks. It was a very bizarre game. I think it was 33-0 or something like that.
It was strange. And also, I suppose some of it will depend on how, the Sharks put together their team for this weekend, because obviously they'll feel there's a rather big fish to fry in a week's time.
Yeah, I'm just 35-0 was it? It was in November 27, 2022. When it was wet in Durban and Cardiff put on the masterclass in wet weather. Team, they tended to be, they didn't really offer too much against the Lions. But you'd hope that another week in South Africa, playing at sea level now, they might be better than the Sharks.
I think they will be better this week, and it'll probably be conditions that suit them a little bit more. So you'd expect a better effort from them. So yeah, I think a lot of it boils down to, I still think the Sharks should win, but some of it will boil down to, how they put out their match day 23.
And then the final game of the weekend is, of course, in Kingspan Stadium in Belfast, Ulster hosting Leinster. That's going to be a tough one. I think Ulster can do it, but if they're going to do it, it's going to be one of those arm wrestle, heads in the mud, sort of grind them down type thing, because Leinster are a team that loves to score points, and they look like they're in good form as well at the moment.
Yeah, but there again, a lot of it will depend on how Leinster put together their team, because they too have an even bigger fish to fry the following week. So I think Ulster will kind of fancy their chances. Look, ordinarily, if Leinster took their full-strength team, I think they'll win. Yeah. But I think given their commitments over the next fortnight, you'd have to leave the door open for an Ulster upset. So I don't want to say Ulster win because it's brave. I'm still going to say Leinster win because there is something on the line for them, and they obviously want to cement a place in the top two at the very least. So I'm still going to go Leinster by not much.
I go Leinster, but with an asterisk, depending on the team they pick. They pick the same team that was in Joburg or
Cape Town. Yeah,
then they won't win that game. I don't think they will, but yeah, depends what the mindset there is. I understand the sentiment that it's bad that we talk like this about teams, what team they're going to pick, etc. But unfortunately, teams have to prioritize. Yeah, that's the reality of this thing. So.
To be fair to them, although they say they haven't won the URC and it's important to them, we all know that the real priority is the Champions Cup and that it'll be all in for that.
Yeah. Now let's turn to the most uncontentious decision that World Rugby has made. I'm obviously joking here. I've seen all sorts of reactions on social media from them trying to depower the South African scrum to every time South Africa wins a World Cup, World Rugby wants to change the laws. There were some interesting takes on it. But World Rugby announced some changes to the sport. The main one that seems to have got people upset is the one that when I just see Damien Willems putting his fists together in the World Cup when I think about this, is that you can't take a scrum from a free kick. And I suppose the first worry that will come through that is that, and I know teams can't do it consistently, but you could see a situation in a game where you under pressure on your own line or you're under pressure and in some form in the field and you engage early or you push early in a scrum, et cetera, or a team gets a free kick or you make some sort of, I'm not sure teams are going to work out some sort of way to counter that. But you could see it being used for a team with a weaker scrum to their advantage.
Yeah, even if you're under pressure and you feel another scrum, you've now collapsed it a few times, that might go to a penalty. But if you can manufacture a situation where you know it's going to be a tap penalty instead of a scrum, you'd rather have that. Yeah. So depending obviously on what the offense is. But I think it does, there is a little bit of manipulation that can happen.
It's obviously going to be interesting to see how teams adapt to that because tap penalty is definitely going to become more interesting and we're going to see a lot more variations of it. And also tactical kicking from a free kick might change as well. The DuPont law being changed, I don't have a problem with that to stop the kick tennis.
Yeah, that's overdue.
That's overdue. But this free kick law, I keep on getting the feeling and you sort of pick it up through newspaper articles and conversations going on in World Rugby that they don't like the scrum. And I mean, anybody who watched Chasing the Sun, we do.
the thing about it is they try and explain it through a better experience for fans that, they kind of put the fans first when they make these amendments. And then, if you say that, then the next question is like, who have you engaged? What set of fans have you spoken to? Obviously, there would be committees that would sit and decide on these things, the different law committees. And then you have to wonder who sits on them and what kind of input teams from South Africa would have and what New Zealand would have, for instance. And you've got to wonder about that. It's one thing to say that it's to make the game a more of a spectacle, and it's something that's more watchable, that kills dead time, and that kind of puts the fan first. But I'm not for one moment saying there's a that I buy into a conspiracy theory. I'm not saying that at all. But I just find it a little bit difficult to accept that one of the sort of pillars of rugby, and in this case I'm talking about the scrum, is being eroded, gradually being eroded, and its influence slowly disappearing.
My take on this has been always the same, is that the one part of the game they never sort out is the breakdown. It's the one part that can give endless problems. And we've got into a bit of a sort of system now where teams really know what's going on. But, I mean, the interpretations of the game breakdown vary from game to game. And in one weekend, you could probably see seven different interpretations. So, yeah, we never fix the breakdown, but we want to tinker with everything else. Secondly, the ball in play is already up from a couple of years ago when it was 25-odd minutes. Now it's averaging in the 30s. At the last World Cup, the ball in play was the highest ever at the World Cup. There isn't something wrong with the game. In fact, I mean, the last World Cup was probably the most exciting contest in terms from a competitive point of view for all teams. You didn't know who was going to win the World Cup. And even though it was a lopsided draw, et cetera, it produced a really good tournament.
Certainly the one half of the draw produced that.
But the point being, there were some really epic games throughout the tournament, which you don't always get at a World Cup. And just generally, if you look at those stats that come out of the World Cup, there's not a problem with the game. And this is a whole thing that seems to, we want to edge away from taking away a team's core strengths, like the Springboks or the scrum. And not just South Africa, talking about other teams who also get strong scrums. But it seems it always feels to me like we're edging towards rugby league more and more. Mm. And if you look at rugby league, that's a sport that's gone backwards in terms of growth. It's played in three or four countries that people actually watch it. But other than that, I mean, rugby's probably shown more growth in that time than rugby league. And there's really a counter argument that maybe we're tinkering too much with the game.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's quite clear that teams with powerful forwards that have great technical ability, that, you just get the sense that, they're being gradually emasculated and that they don't maybe have the power now that they maybe had four or five seasons ago. There's no doubt that is happening. If World Rugby wants to speed up the game and make it more of a spectacle, they should then also look at the involvement of the TMO and how they arrive at decisions, because I find that very frustrating, the fact that so much time is being spent reviewing something, often for something that's, not even that debatable, but they, they decide that we're going to focus in on this and we're going to find something wrong. If the game needs to be sped up, then that's, that area should also be looked at, because at the moment, I think too much dead time there is being created.
Yeah, and I think part of that, to me, is just, you talk about the TMO, there's times where it becomes ridiculous when they pour over these replays for minutes on end, often more.
You see the same thing.
Yeah. And you see replays at minute speed, and rugby is a collision sport. I mean, things happen in real time. And you just sort of feel to yourself, it's a bit unfair to the players where they're being asked to make split-second decisions, and their split-second decisions are being reviewed in minute detail by somebody in front of a monitor. I don't know. There should be a way of speeding up that. I agree with you 100% there. I don't think rugby really wants to. And of course, nobody's saying here that players shouldn't be protected in terms of head knocks and things like that. We all want a safer game. But I really hope we never get to a point where we don't see the likes of a Frans Malherbe or a Joe Marler or somebody like that, because we've made the game so fast that we've taken those guys out of the game, like Greg.
But people shouldn't just take our word for this. We've got some expert voices on the scrum as well. So
interestingly, Liam, we're going to start off with Jake White, who's got a very different take on this. He says he doesn't buy into the conspiracy theory at all. And
not that we do necessarily, but
But he thinks World Rugby is only doing it for the good of the game. It's caused quite a bit of debate amongst people I know. So have a listen and tell us if you agree with Jake.
Yeah, conspiracy theorist about why that happens, because certain teams have strong scrums.
Yeah.
I want to explain to you guys that the laws of rugby are made for school kids. They're not made for professional players. And I think people that read into that are naive, because, so I'll give you an example. When you used to have a squeeze ball where a player used to go into his all fours and push the ball through his legs. Remember, it was a big thing at certain stage. And they can't. Because what happens, school kids see that, and then they copy what they see Delalio do, or they see Malcolm Marks do. Now, those guys are they men with strong necks, and if a little kid tries to do that and someone lands on him and he's now paralyzed, then parents don't want their kids to play rugby. So if you just take that into context, if you can limit the amount of scrums, you're going to get more kids to play rugby. No one's saying that the scrum should be depowered. No one's saying, I mean, let's be fair, over the time, schoolboy rugby's gone from you could scrum to now you can only scrum a meter and a half, whatever. So it has changed. All I would say in answer to that is there's no conspiracy about that. There will be, the lawmakers and the referees are going to have to work out how many free kicks they give now at scrum time. Because there will be a lot more playing around. And coaches are like that. They'll now find a way that sometimes to give a team a free kick is better to defend than it is to defend from a scrum. So that is something that the referees are going to have to take into consideration. But what I am stressing to the people out there is the laws of the game are made to make more people play it, and the laws of the game are to make sure it's safer, and the laws of the game are there to make it clear to teams that's how the shape of the game should be. So it's got nothing to do with some teams want to scrum and other teams. It would be for parents to be comfortable that you wouldn't have, because let's be fair, every time you go scrum, that means some schoolboys start with scrum double the amount that they would necessarily have to, and therefore that increases the risk of having neck injuries, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I don't read anything into that other than the lawmakers have looked at a way in which they can make the game shape a lot better. And let's be fair, guys. I mean, if it's a tap free kick and you have a tap and run it now, well, then theoretically there's more ball in play and there's better time. So then you look at it from that context, instead of just saying, oh, that means that the powerhouse scrum teams are now disadvantaged. I don't believe that at all. I mean, people said that when they brought in 50-22s and people brought in, you know, when you could, all those things where supposedly you couldn't kick the ball out if you didn't pass it back into your 22. All that happened is ball in players. And now instead of a game that used to be 24 minutes ball in play, it's now 37, 38, 40 minutes ball in play. Now, you know, who knows, maybe free kick, tap, free kick. Next one's a penalty, because it won't be free kick all the time. It will be a penalty, and now you give yardage away and territory. So, you know, who knows, maybe scrumming will improve, and maybe the tactics of scrumming will be different as well.
And then finally, we turn to a guy who had a serious neck injury and probably ended his career, Springbok Julian Reerlinghuis, who's the Lions scrum coach. And he also had quite a unique take on it. Have a listen to Julian talk about the scrums as well.
Adam, it's obvious that I will agree with that. I think not a lot of teams have made use of the scrum specifically from a free kick. By them taking that away, it's just giving Damian Willemse some TV time and air time. But obviously the scrum is a big part of the game. And if it wants to be like league where you have similar size guys and they play, it's different. But the rugby, what we appreciate about it is every guy's got his place and you've got different players for different roles. And the scrum and the maul, I think the maul is also one point where everyone's always debating. But it's two places where you can legally get dominance, which is a massive part of rugby. So I'm glad. Well, I hope they keep up with the scrums because then I've got a job at least. Otherwise, I could do something else. And there I will come up for the spectator, because the frustrating thing for everyone is when a scrum is reset like three times, the wingers on the edge, they want the ball, and now they're just looking at a scrum falling down and standing up again. So I think for us to manage, for the industry to manage the scrums and the process of the scrum, so it's still a good contest, but it doesn't take up ball in play time. I think that's a good strategy, because you want ball in play to be as high as possible, to let these guys that have X factor do their thing so that people want to watch the game, because that's ultimately how you generate income for the game. So, yeah, I'm for that. A shot clock, I'm not sure if that's going to make a big difference. What's going to happen if the shot clock is empty? I'm not sure. So I haven't read that yet, but whatever strategies they put in place to make sure the scrums don't take up ball in play time, I think that is a good starting point.
Well, Brendan, we've had a wide range of views there. It's always interesting to chat to Julian about the scrum. In fact, about most things, he always provides a an interesting perspective.
Yeah, he is a mind that you hope would never be lost in the game, because he's always also a positive guy. He's always just got this sort of laugh on him and everything. Whereas Don Heman is very serious.
Julian takes things in his stride, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does. And he's interesting fact. I mean, his wife is a preacher. She's a Germany. So I suppose, when you manier Germany, as they say, you've got to take certain things in your stride. But he's a great guy, and we quite enjoy his viewpoints at times. There's only one other thing we left to say, Liam. This weekend marks the end of an era. A massive end of the era for somebody, anybody who's watched rugby for probably the last two decades. Ruan Pienaar will play his last game for the Cheetahs this weekend. It's so sad to see the guy. I mean, I think he's probably only a couple of years younger than us, but he's one of these guys who just really never gets tends to stop. And he's now made that decision. He's going off into a coaching career at the Cheetahs. Not quite what Frans Steyn wanted him to do, as he told us in the podcast a couple of weeks ago. But certainly something that I think we're going to still see him in the game a lot more. And I mean, there's even talk in Ireland about him becoming an Ulster coach at some point. They seem to love him up there, as a lot of people in South African rugby do love him as well.
He's a folk hero up there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy to understand why. As we've seen when he's played, he never really came, I suppose, into his prime for the Springboks, even though he was incredibly successful, if you actually look at his stats.
That's always the thing about Ruan Pienaar, because he is so supremely gifted. And although he's played a ton of tests, you still sort of have that lingering thought in the back of your mind, which is perhaps unfair on him, whether true potential was reached. But I mean, he had some standout tests for the Springboks as well. I mean, if you recall the 2008 end of year tour where he was selected at fly-off, and the Springboks played England at Twickenham, and Ruan Pienaar was just simply on a different planet. I mean, they ended up, I think it's still the Springboks' biggest win against England at Twickenham, and they whipped them 42-6. And it was just a supreme display.
Yeah, I mean, he is a legend of the game. And I think probably Ulster got the best of him, and that's probably why he's a legend. Mm. And when he was with the Springboks, he might have played in eras where, how can we put it, that the team didn't dominate as much to highlight his talent. And but I think we've seen, even now, at his age now, what he's done for Free State rugby in the last 3-4 years that he's been there as well.
Yeah, we probably also need to make the point that, I mean, his career coincided with Purina Pri at scrum off, and then if you think of him in a different position, there were probably other fly-offs around that probably better suited test rugby.
Probably. I mean, it was in the era of Butch James was still around, the Andre Pretorius. There's a couple of guys like that. I don't think who else was back then. Jeez, my memory's going.
There's Mornay Steyn as well, I suppose. Yes. Yeah.
Well, Mornay Steyn is, and quite ironically, they're good friends and sort of grew up together, him and Ron. So, just amazing sort of the talent that comes through there from the Free State there. Mornay, obviously, also growing up in the Free State. So, it's just interesting how close those are. So.
And it's amazing his accuracy with the boot. I mean, when he kicks the rugby ball, it's like it's something that comes naturally to him. I remember leaving a Springbok training in Edinburgh, and from about probably 55 meters away, and obviously we were outside the field, not inside the field, but outside it, and somebody just shouted, "Duck!" And I tried to duck, but it hit me on the back of the head. So you've got to admire the man's accuracy.
Yeah, players tend to do that quite a bit. Target journalists on the side of the field. That's a whole podcast episode on its own. But we're gonna leave you with this last thoughts, and these are Ron himself about what it means to end his career. And we're gonna throw in a bit of Frans Steyn, who's sitting next to him. and just tell you what he feels as well.
Yeah, I think I probably chose my position wisely. I think Francois took a bit more hammering in the midfield than I did at scrum half. But I must say I've been really blessed and fortunate that I haven't picked up long-term injuries. I had a knee early on when I was 19 or 20, and that was probably the most serious I had. But yeah, everything is still intact. And yeah, so hopefully all goes well on Friday. I can, and I'll leave the game still feeling fine, willing or being able to play with my kids after this. So I've been very fortunate. Yeah, I don't know. All those things on ice, I think winning trophies and medals and all those things. But, and yeah, being a part of big games, I think that's always a massive thrill. But I think I've mentioned it before. I think all the memories, that's all you're going to have left once you retire. I think Francie's probably gone through that already. Like all those things, it's nice and being a part of it. But I think the memories you make with friends and meeting new people and all the banter in the change rooms and during the week and after games, I think those are stuff that you'll always remember, the stories you'll tell and share as you retire. So, yeah, I think I'm going to miss playing, but I think those things will probably be with you for longer than all the rest of it.
No, he's been there since the start. Just my first tour with the boxer, he wasn't my roommate. And then after that, we've been roommates since then. What's nice at the moment for me as well is that he's here at the Cheetahs as well, not helping me as much as I wanted him at the moment to help me, but he's going to be here and he's going to help me. Being a friend, what he is to me, it's nice having somebody like that here. Like I said earlier as well, as I may say, ek jaag stront, dan gaan ek het geloof. Stront, so, ja, it's not. Dit is 'n sad dag eintlik Vrydag. Ek dink Suid-Afrika het oor die jare groot rugby spelers gehad en ek dink spesifiek Roan gewys ek dink die krediet het altyd na hom toe gekom wat moes nie. Volgens my as ek 'n wêreld 15 tal moet kies, sal hy een van die eerste ouens wees wat ek neerskryf. So
op watter posisie?
Nee, verseker op skade. Like you said, we've come through a long road together. It's just funny, when I left the Sharks at the beginning, you went to Ulster, and how we ended up at the same place the whole time. So, there's my law of the world of physics, or what do you want to call it. So, it's an awesome mens, and soos ek gesê, as I say, ek gaan ek jaag rond en dan gaan ek kom. Gaan ek mooi gaan kyk in die spieël want dan het ek iewers rond raak. We really hope so. You know, rugby is a funny sport. Maybe they chase us away within 3 months or whatever. So you never know. I think we're here and we want to do good for the Cheetahs firstly, and then for Bloem secondly, and for the Free State as a whole. So it's not like we want to achieve anything for ourselves or something like that. We want to do good for the Cheetahs and for the Free State. So daar's niks by bedoelings by dit nie. Waar ook al ons kan help, waar ook al ons 'n input kan hê, glo ek dis maar dit. Daar's nie 'n ander rede hoekom ons hier sit nie. Ek dink he also had a lot of opportunities to do something else maybe. I don't know, but I'm just happy that he's here and it just shows the love we have for this place.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.